Noon, and welcome back to the men's afternoon kollel. Apologize that we are just a few minutes behind, but thank you for being with us and looking forward to learning together. As Rabbi Shabtai mentioned, as always, we're grateful to the Frohlich Financial Group for their sponsorship. We are running a huge campaign this week. Friends of BRS, members of the BRS global community, we need your help. If you enjoy, if you benefit from, if you read, listen, watch, if you are inspired, if you learn, if you grow from BRS, its classes, its speeches, its articles, its panels, its conversations, we ask for your help, for your partnership. If you're a BRS member, you're doing our part, but you can be a member of the greater BRS global community if you're not yet a member of BRS. Please go to brsonline.org/global, brsonline.org/global. It will be added to the chat. You'll be able to click it afterwards very easily in order to be able to join easily. And I hope that you will, because we need everybody's help. We need everybody's participation. And we're asking modest, whatever you can give, whatever you can do to be part of our initiative, our endeavor, our effort, our inspiration, our campaign. We'd greatly, greatly appreciate it. Okay, those who are watching, we're across several platforms here. Some will be able to see and others will simply listen, but I'm happy to share the source sheets with anyone who would like them after the fact. Okay, on Zoom, you see the source sheets? Somebody. Who's watching? Okay, thank you, Rabbi Brand, as always. Okay, so we are going through the halachic considerations, Jewish legal considerations in wills and estates. We've spoken about the importance of having a halachic living will, which is not our topic for today. We've spoken about the importance of having a halachic will to ensure that no one is stealing, that if somebody takes from who are otherwise the rightful heirs, that you are not stealing from them, and what's involved in having a halachic will. Before that, we talked about a tzava'a, a halachic ethical will, and ensuring that a person is leaving instructions not only what to do with their money and their assets and their property and their real estate and their holdings, but their values. How to ensure that children, grandchildren, and generations to come will not only inherit material physical possessions, but will also inherit a vision and a set of values, and how important it is, and how many of our great earlier mothers and fathers left a tzava, left what we call an ethical will. We talked about the propriety of leaving a significant portion of your estate to tzedakah. How much should be left to tzedakah? How much should be left to your children? A parent's responsibility to position their children to succeed. The best platform for them to live that life pursuing those values is to not have to live in fear or crisis when it comes to money, and therefore to the best of one's ability to position their children and grandchildren so they can focus on Torah and mitzvahs and chesed, all the while still being ambitious and aspirational to grow in the ways that they want to and should be able to grow. One of the tzedakahs you should consider is the BRS Global Campaign. So if you haven't hit the button yet, if you're watching on our page, brsonline.org/global, you can hit donate and leave a nice message in honor of Rabbi Shabtai for putting the afternoon kollel together, or any of the teachers. If you're listening on another platform, go to brsonline.org/global. And even though it'll be a little bit less for your children, you'll leave them a great legacy of giving and supporting the places that provide and inspire you with Torah. And then we came to the question of whether one is obligated to follow the way it appears in the Torah, the halachic prescription of the Torah, of the way it organizes what we have to leave our children in the story of Benot Slavchad. And we saw the Shulchan Aruch follows it. A son, and then the son's children and grandchildren, if you don't have through a son, and then it goes the different directions, up, side, down, daughter, and so on. How does one circumvent, how does one short circuit that system of what halacha demands and leave a will that's more equitable, a will that will leave greater harmony within a family, is our question. We spoke about the Bechor. The Bechor, the first son, is Notel Pishnaim. The firstborn son takes a double portion. But they don't get a double portion in everything. They only get a double portion, said the Mishnah, in that which the father was Muchzak, actual real liquid holdings. That which was potential, like debt, that's not yet been recovered, does not. And we saw Machlokas, a debate. How does one view money in the bank, in a bank account? Is the bank account considered the real money of the parent? Or is the bank account considered the potential money, essentially money that's been lent to the bank, the bank's paying interest on, that will recover when you want to be able to take it from the bank? We saw similarly in Machlokas between the Nod Yehuda and the Aruch HaShulchan about bonds, government bonds. Are those Roy or Muchzak? Is a government bond, when you hold the bond, when you own the bond, is the document, the shtar of the bond, is that as significant as legal tender, as money, as bills? Or do you say it's potential until you until the bond matures and until you have the actual assets of the bond, that's considered potential, not real. That too was a machlokas. So the application of a bechor getting a double portion, the eldest son getting the double portion, is not so simple or straightforward, but again, there are details. To be the firstborn, it meant not born through C-section. That is not a firstborn born, because that baby has been removed from the mother, but not born, at least according to the halachic definition of being born. We saw it has to be the firstborn of the father, even if it's not the firstborn of the mother. And that brought us up to where we are now, the Rashba, which we began, or we ended with last week, and we said we're going to begin with this week. Source 28, if you're looking at the source sheet, it's on page 10. So the Tshuvas of the Rashba of Shlomo ben Aderes, one of the great Rishonim, one of the great medieval authorities of halacha, commentators on the Talmud, and then authorities of Torah law, of halachic law. And he says the following. He deals with the question, as we spoke about or set it up last time. The Rashba was dealing with the following question. Over here. The Rashba was dealing with the following question. Reuven has a daughter, Leah, who's married to Shimon, and they give birth to a daughter. And shortly afterwards, both Leah and the daughter expire. They leave this world. Reuven then claims, based on the law of the land, based on the Dina de Malchusa, based on the law of the land, Reuven says, the money comes back to me. It had been my daughter's dowry. My daughter and my granddaughter both died. So that son-in-law, who has no continuing connection to me, doesn't get the money. It comes back to me. And the son-in-law says, what are you talking about? The halacha is that a husband inherits his wife. And since a husband inherits his wife, the money really comes to me. We went through these halachas as well. A husband versus a wife from a husband. A wife is supported from the estate until she collects her ksuba, but she doesn't inherit the principal. A daughter receives a dowry from the estate, but she doesn't receive any principal unless one employs one of the mechanisms that we'll still get to later on in order to circumvent it. So the Rashba was asked, who's right? Do you follow the law of the land? And does the father-in-law get his money back that he had really only given ever as part of a dowry? Or do you follow the law of the land? Or do you follow the halacha? Is the son-in-law right? When he says, what are you talking about? The halacha says that a husband inherits his wife. The money really belongs to me. And the Rashba, we ended last week by telling you, in very strong terms, the Rashba is unequivocally clear. And the Rashba is very strong and says, when does Dina de Malchusa Dina, when is it that we follow the law of the land when it comes to taxes and when it comes to sewage and garbage collection, when it comes to interpersonal relationships, our relationships with society and civilization, when it comes to our responsibility to the secular world around us? They were bound by the secular law. It is a Jewish law to observe the secular law. So if those are the taxes imposed upon us, and they're not in violation or conflict of a Jewish law, we're bound by the tax law. If the speed limit is the speed limit universally placed upon us for the good of society, a social contract, we are bound by the speed limit. That is Dina de Malchusa Dina. But says the Rashba, when the Dina de Malchusa Dina, when the law of the land is in conflict with the law of Torah on an area that is not the business of secular society, that's not their interest, how we execute the laws of Yerusha, the laws of inheritance and bequests. That's not the business of the king of the government. The Jewish law has its own system. Jewish law has its own formula. Jewish law has what to say. Then Jewish law will supersede what the secular law. You would not apply Dina de Malchusa Dina in such a circumstance. This opinion of the Rashba, who says that in fact, to follow the law of the land over the halacha is corrupt and will lead to gzela. Just to look at his words again. It's source 28, as I said, on page 10, if you have the source sheet. He says, Chochmei Yisrael hem ka'avim she'Yisrael v'chai l'shmo lehem. Our rabbis, the halacha, are our fathers, and we're obligated to listen. We are a nation. We have our own distinct and unique laws. They come from God. He gave us the blueprint and he gave us the manual. He gave us the instructions of what is moral and what is ethical. So one of those moral and ethical laws is to follow Dina de Malchusa. But that's when it comes to society. When it comes to laws of inheritance, which are between Jew and Jew, parent and child, that we have our own system. If you're going to uproot the inheritance of a father on children, you're going to knock down the walls of Torah, you're going to uproot and you're going to remove the branches, Anyone who says that you return the money to the father because it's his dowry and that's what the civil law dictates, Toa is making a terrible mistake. Vegazlanu ugzela yashiv. And therefore, if the father takes the money back because he's following the civil law, and he takes it out of the hands of the former son-in-law because he's having the civil law supersede the halacha, he has stolen, and he has a halachic obligation, responsibility to return that which is stolen. The Rama of Moshe Isserles follows this halacha. The Beis Yosef follows this, and the Rama follows this, and they conclude, Dina de Machusa does not override Hilchos Yerusha. In the area of inheritance and bequests, the law of the land does not supersede, does not override the halacha, and therefore a conflict between the two, we follow the halacha. This seems to be the opinion of, as I said, the Beis Yosef and the Rama and many, many other poskim. Now, it's clear, so the following question comes up. What happens if one did not take the proactive steps to make a halachic will? Not a halachic living will, a halachic will. So somebody meets with their estate lawyer who's not Jewish or a non-observant Jew or not a non-Torah scholar, and they had no idea that there are rules that govern how we leave money to children and grandchildren or to whomever, and they don't understand that Torah has a prescription and a formula that we have to work within and operate within. So they write a simple secular civil law, and the person dies only having left a secular civil law. So what is the halacha for the benefactor, for the inheritor of that law, of that will? Are they stealing from the other from whom halacha would have said they have to? So let's say a man divides his estate. He's got a son and a daughter. He gives 50% for simplicity, 50% to his son, 50% to his daughter. And he never had a halachic will. He did not come to the afternoon kollel. He didn't have the benefit and the beauty of the Dr. Yitzchak Belzon Beis Medrash and the kollel, the afternoon kollel of BRS, for which you should all go to brs.online.org/global and make sure to do your part and to give whatever amount. We're deeply appreciative for your partnership, for your help, and frankly, for your expressing gratitude for the ability to sit at home in Yagatkas 4 afternoons a week and listen to Torah, not from me, but from other great speakers and Rosh Yeshiva who join. Please show your hakaras hatov by doing your part and by giving. So this man wasn't part of the kollel, and he didn't hear the halachic, the series on wills and estates. He didn't know. He left simply a secular civil will. And he left that 50% of his estate should go to his son, 50% to his daughter. Ah, but halacha says 100% goes to the son. The daughter's only entitled to collect her dowry if she is single or certain other rights or privileges in the estate, but she's not entitled to any of the principal of the estate itself. So if the daughter says, well, dad, Abba, Tati, left a will, and he said, I get 50%. And the son says, nice try, sis. That's what it says in the civil will. But halacha says, I get 100%. I'm going to take you to a Beis Din. And now the Beis Din has to paskin. Do we take the 50% out of the hands of the daughter? Or do we let her keep the 50% as stipulated and indicated in the will, the secular civil will of the father? Essentially, this is the question of the Rashba. Will the civil law supersede halacha? Or, where the father didn't observe halacha in leaving his will, does halacha dictate we follow the halachic hierarchy? Or can you follow the secular civil will in such a situation? Or moreover, let's give an even more specific example. Someone didn't leave a will at all. If someone didn't leave a will at all, what is the halacha? A person dies intestate, which means a fancy word of saying they died without a will. So what will happen? Civil authorities step in, and there are trustees or whatever estate people who step in, and they examine and they figure out the value of the estate, and they follow whatever the civil law is in dictating and determining how to distribute the estate in accordance with the laws of estate planning or whatever the estate laws are. So the civil authorities will distribute, and they're going to distribute in ways that differ from the halacha, in ways that differ from the halacha. So is the person who receives that gift, so let's say, I don't know what the estate laws are. I see we have some lawyers who are listening. So you do, so don't correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm only saying this to illustrate. But let's say the interstate laws, intestacy, I forget what the fancy word is, the interstate laws say that if a person did not have a civil law, a secular will, so we're going to give it to the closest relative, and we determined that was a cousin twice removed, and we call the cousin and we say, good news for you, you just won the lottery, you got all this money. And he happens to be a frum yid, he happens to be a Torah observant Jew, and he wants to know, he goes to his rabbi and he says, but what do I do? Because I looked at the halacha, and the halacha says, rather than me, the one who should receive this is a different cousin, is the uncle, is the whomever. The halacha says someone else gets it, not me. So he goes to Israel, he goes to the posek, and he says, what's the halacha? The civil law, the interstate law that said that when no will is filled out, said that I get it. But halacha says someone else gets it. Halachically, am I entitled to keep it? So according to the Rashba, you would have thought it was a very short answer. According to the Rashba, what's the answer? Absolutely not. You must not and cannot keep it. If you keep it, you're violating, you're stealing. You must not and you cannot keep it. You're absolutely stealing. Chas v'shalom, God forbid, how could you do that? According to the Rashba, halacha will supersede civil law in this circumstance and in this case. However, we come to Rav Moshe's tshuva. The Heiliger Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik, the Kadosh, Livrocha. It takes Rav Moshe to write this tshuva. And says Rav Moshe the following. We're in source number 30 on page number 11. Source 30 already. Well, it is part 4 of this class. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva. Evin Ezer Chelik Aleph, Simen Kuf Dalad. B'davar Tzavasa Isha Barakos Al Kaspeh Shemunachem Babank. And the question is the following. Let's look at the question together, and then we'll see a summary of this tshuva. B'davar, let me make it a little bigger. I'll pretend it's for you, but really it's for me, because I'm getting older. Yedidi Arav Hagon Betzalel Lakon Shlita Gon Av Beis Din Patterson. So I guess Patterson had an Av Beis Din at the time, and the Av Beis Din of Patterson, I assume this is Patterson, New Jersey, which is where Yavne Academy, my elementary school, was before it moved to Paramus. Patterson, New Jersey, had an Av Beis Din at some time, named Rabbi Tzalel HaKohen, and he submitted to Rav Moshe the following question. Tzavasi isha akaspeh shailo bebank, the will of a woman whose money was in a bank, litein mehem gam latzdaka, to give, and the woman indicated in her will that a portion of her estate, which is in the bank, should be left to money, to tzedakah. A tzedakah like, for example, the BRS online.org/global campaign. Vabal omer shahayu shala isha. Ach mach machine nasna la osat staka shnadar. Gam hu litain rota lachzor mashanadar. Gam hu la osat staka. So he says, look, the money really should have come to me. So she's leaving it some to the staka. That should fulfill the promise, the oath, the nether I took to give to staka. Venestapik yididi ulai ladina ain savasa klum. De yorisha sabaila. Mamela yachala achshiv maoseh shnas lo tzedaka batzava l'tashlumin nidrosh shnas chayv hu lo osot tzedaka. Maybe this man, who probably did go to the BRS afternoon kolol, to have such an einfal, such a great Talmudic logic, he said, really, the will of my wife is a gornished. She has a will, it's not a halachic will, it's a secular civil will. So in her will, when she says bank should give some of the money to the tzedaka, and I, parenthetically, I, by the way, also made a neder, I took an oath, a promise, I was going to leave money, the same staka. So really, her secular civil will should have been an absolute nothing. Halachically, I, as the husband, should have inherited 100% of what she has. The fact that the secular civil law is going to take what she indicated should go to the charity, out of what should have come to me halachically and give it to the charity, that should fulfill my oath of what I promised the charity. What a great einfah, what a great chap of this husband. Really, 100% halachically should have come to me. Secular civil law is going to take out of what's coming to me what she said secularly and civilly should go to the charity. I happen to have made an oath, a promise, a pledge to give to the charity. The money that should have come to me, but that's going to go to the charity because of her, really is coming from me because I should have inherited her, and therefore it should fulfill my neder, it should fulfill my oath, my promise, my pledge. This was the question posed to Rav Moshe. Is this person's lumdus, is his chiddush accurate? Is it correct? Or let us paraphrase. Essentially, the question to Rav Moshe is that here's a will drafted according to secular law, but not halacha. Is it halachically binding? Is a will drafted according to secular law, but not halacha, halachically binding? Now, I will reiterate over and over again, it is certainly not what should be done, even though we're going to see Rav Moshe's very novel and very, very minority, very not normative opinion in a moment. But even with Rav Moshe's opinion, one must have a halachic will. If you've been listening to the series and you've not called your estate lawyer to revisit, if you do not have the halachic parameter, all you have to do is insert one paragraph to your will to make it a halachic will. We're not even up to that yet, but we will get there. So please God, everyone should live long and healthy. It's a skula. If you take care of your will, it's tzava. It's a school for arichas yamim. It's not really, but that's what we say to make you do your tzava. It's a school for arichas yamim. It means, please God, everyone should live a long, long and prosperous and healthy and happy life together with the BRS Global community, which they are a partner and have contributed to at brsonline.org/global. How come you're all running there? Probably because you don't want to interrupt the learning. You're going to go after the kolo. But make sure you visit it after the kolo and give if you're not yet a BRS member. Please do your part and show your gratitude. So Rav Moshe was, so you have to have a halachic will. Even Rav Moshe's opinion, Rav Moshe's opinion is b'dieved. Rav Moshe's opinion is after the fact. Someone only drafted a civil, secular will, not a halachic will. What would halacha say? Do you disregard it and follow the halacha? Or is the civil secular will binding in some manner? That was the question to Rav Moshe. But Rav Moshe, of course, agrees you have to have a halachic will. You have to draft it according to halachic guidelines. The question is, will this be binding? This was the question posed to Leilaga Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. And Rav Moshe has the following enormous chiddush. We're not going to learn the whole tshuva. The whole tshuva is here on this one page. Siman Kuf Dal and Eben Ezra's Chelek Aleph. Again, I'm happy to email the source sheet to anyone who would like it. Please be in touch with me. And especially happy to send it to those who are members of the BRS Global Community or members of BRS. We'll just look at Rav Moshe's conclusion. And Rav Moshe has a very, very novel conclusion. And he says that a will drafted in compliance with civil law is halachically valid. And an heir to such a will is not a thief. They've not stolen from whomever halacha would have determined should have been the beneficiary of the will. Says Rav Moshe, if all there is a secular will, it is halachically binding. And whomever the secular will gives a portion or the estate to is not a ganav or a gazlan, has not stolen from whoever should have been the beneficiary halachically, and they need not or must not. They're not obligated to return it. How does he come to this conclusion? He says the following. Let's look at his last paragraph. Zeu tam gadol mashe be'aretz hazos. This is a great reason, says Rav Moshe, why in this land, America, no'agin lismoch atzavos ke'elu ve'inchosh melika chamos tztaka. In our land, people follow a secular law. It's proper to have a halachic will, but if you don't have a halachic will, people still observe and keep their secular will. Ve'im ki lo nachdu l'zeh mikom makom. They didn't understand why they weren't relying on Rav Moshe's chiddush, but nevertheless, if they're not neviim, b'nei neviim, they got lucky. They did something which is going to end up being halachically binding, even if they don't appreciate or understand the mechanism. Dayan Grunfeld was a great dayan on the London Beis Din. Dayan Grunfeld wrote up The Jewish Laws of Inheritance, a wonderful book, and I should mention that we have been collecting this series, of which we have a long way to go still, from wonderful articles, Reb Chaim Jachter, and a great article that was sent to me that was in the journal Chakira, called The Propriety of a Civil Will, Yehuda Warburg, A. Yehuda Warburg, who is faculty of law, Dr. Jurisprudence, Dayan, serving the Hasidic, Non-Orthodox, in yeshiva communities of New Jersey and New York. He has a long article, The Propriety of a Civil Will, in the Chakira Journal. They're all well worth reading, and we're referencing, or many of our references or sources come from these many articles, in the Pesachei Choshen Sefer, and many others. So this is one of them, The Jewish Law of Inheritance, from Dayan Grunfeld. He quotes here, Rav Moshe Feinstein of New York goes much further than Rav Yaakov Englinger and Rav Chaim Isaac Grzynski, we'll come to their psakim in a moment, and maintains that a testament made by a Jewish person according to the law of the land, whilst he was in good health, is valid in Jewish religious law, although there was no kinyan, because a donation made in such a testament does not need a kinyan. This was Rav Moshe's chiddush. How does it work exactly? The question is, what is Rav Moshe doing that's working? What is Rav Moshe saying? There's no kinyan l'achar misa. You can't transfer money after you die. So how is it that a secular will should work? Really, at the moment a person dies, at the exact moment that a person dies, whomever halacha determines should receive the money, should be the one who then owns the money. That should be the halacha. So if that's the case, that the halachic beneficiary should get the money immediately, and there's no way to transact, there's no way to transfer ownership, l'achar misa, after death, how is the secular will binding? That was really the question that Rav Moshe is going to have to deal with. That's what Rav Moshe is going to have to deal with. Rav Moshe says that one can follow the secular will and you're not considered stealing, you're not violating halacha, and the secular will be binding, even though it is kineged, even though it is inconsistent with halacha. How? The question is, what's the mechanism for Rav Moshe? How will the money transfer? So again, Beryl dies and he has $100,000, and he has a secular will saying that $50,000 goes to his daughter, or he had no secular will, and now secular law is going to step in and say, examine the estate and make a determination of to whom the money should go. So Rav Moshe says, good, you could follow the determination. You could follow a secular will. He should have had a halachic will. He was wrong not to have a halachic will, but you could follow a secular will. But the question is how? What's the mechanism? Halacha, doesn't halacha make it that the son should have gotten 100% at the moment of the father's death? So where does the girl come later to come to the estate and say, give me 50% just because the secular will says it? Or in the case that there's no will, halacha says immediately it should kick in who should benefit from the money. So the fact that the estate comes along later and makes the determination, what is the mechanism of transfer? Aim kinyan la'achar misa. After someone dies, in order to be able to transact, in order to be able to transfer ownership, in order for someone to acquire from someone else, the someone else has to be among the living. You have to be alive. So if the owner is deceased, how can he transfer ownership to someone else? That is the question. That is the predicament or the dilemma that's facing Rav Moshe in his position of why it should work that a civil or secular law should be halachically binding. So this is Rav Moshe's chiddush. His chiddush is, you don't need a kinyan in such a situation. Jewish and non-Jewish law differs as to whether the effect of the particular clause in the testament, I give and bequeath, only sets in after death. In spite of the fact that in Jewish law, a donation cannot be effected after the death of the donor, Rav Moshe writes the following. Even though the bequest is a gift posthumously, and there is no acquisition or transaction after death, shekvar eina shela. In this case, Rav Moshe is true, but he's dealing with a woman. So the money's no longer hers. To give it to a tzedakah, to give it to the husband, to give it to whomever. It's no longer hers. So therefore, how could the matana, how could the gift of tzedakah be binding after her death? She's no longer here to give it. And nothing can be transferred without someone to give, to transfer.
Those
are the magic words of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe's magic words are, Ein lecha kinyan gadol mizeh. There is no greater transfer or transaction than that. Here's the translation of Rav Moshe. Although we're dealing here with a gift to be made after the death of a donor, and there's no such thing as a kinyan after death, as the object no longer belongs to the donor, and such a gift is therefore not valid in Jewish law, nevertheless, according to the law of the land, that a person can legally transfer with effect after death, money or any other object which at that time obviously no longer belongs to him or her. But in essence, it is clear, according to my humble opinion, says Rav Moshe, that a testament of this kind, the dispositions of which will certainly be put into effect by the authorities of the country, does not need a kinyan, as one could not imagine a more effective kinyan than this. In other words, halacha can't imagine a kinyan la'achra misa. But if the law of the land will take it out of the bank account and put it in someone else's, that replaces the kinyan we couldn't imagine. There is no kinyan gadol mizeh, says Rav Moshe. Meaning we don't have a means of transferring the ownership from someone who's deceased. But if the law of the land transfers that ownership, ain't kinyan gadol mizeh. Hence, since the kinyan is not necessary, the legatees can uphold their right also against the persons who are the proper heirs by Torah law, although there's no such thing in Jewish law as a gift after the death of the donor. So in other words, halacha doesn't recognize kinyan la'achar misa because halacha has no means to do it. But where halacha has no mechanism or means to transfer the ownership after death, that's where the civil or secular law steps in and says that they do have the ability. They do have the ability. And therefore, even halachically, someone can point to the civil law and say, that's the mechanism. You, halacha, have no mechanism. But you, halacha, recognize secular law. And secular law is in itself the mechanism of the transfer. And therefore, according to Moshe, that is exactly how it's going to be. It's exactly how it's going to be binding. It's a huge chiddush of Moshe. It's a huge chiddush. Moshe is basing his view on the sugya of Tanai Beis Din in Binyan Dichrin, in the end of his, in Gemara Baba Basra and Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph. And at the end of his disquisition, which is a fancy word for saying his tshuva, his essay, he remarks, as we had read, this is a valid reason why in the USA people rely on such testaments and do not hesitate to accept legacies based on them. And although not all who make such testaments under the deeper halachic reason, in other words, when you rely on the secular civil will and you don't employ a halachic will, you're not doing it because you know the dinim of Ein Kinyan La'achar Misa, Aber Ein Kinyan Gadol Mizu, you're not knowing the whole lamdus. Rav Moshe is conceding that the average person who has a secular will and doesn't have halachic doesn't know the lamdas of the mechanism, but they have the right intention, because if they're not prophets, they're descendants of prophets. That is Rav Moshe's enormous, enormous chiddush. There's no recognition under Jewish law of a kinyan achar misa, because assets no longer belong to the person. But according to the law of the land, they can transfer even after death. And since according to the law of the land, they can transfer after death, Rav Moshe says there is no greater kinyan than this. It's a huge chiddush. Such a huge chiddush, it was not accepted widely. Dayan Aryeh Leib Grasnas, who was a prominent dayan on the London Beis Din, wrote a strong and thorough and comprehensive critique of Rav Moshe's tshuva. And his tshuva is Leib Aryeh. Dayan Grasnas' tshuvos. In his tshuvos Leib Aryeh, he wrote a very strong critique of Rav Moshe's tshuva. And it's not just Dayan Grasnas. He writes here as well. Dayan Grunfeld writes, whether Rabbi Feinstein's halachic attitude towards testaments made in accordance with the law of the land without a kinyan by testators in a good state of health will be accepted by his halachic peers is doubtful. Although Rabbi Feinstein himself belongs to the leading halachists of our time. In other words, you can't dismiss Rav Moshe. You can't dismiss Rav Moshe. And by the way, in a Beis Din, it might uphold if somebody comes in who is the beneficiary of assets through a secular law, and a relative comes in and says, well, according to halacha, I get. So they might be able to tell the Beis Din, to represent to the Beis Din, I follow Rav Moshe. I have the right to follow Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe would say the secular civil law is binding. How would the Beis Din paskin in such a situation? They may not hold of Rav Moshe, and therefore their psak may not reflect Rav Moshe. So Dayan Grasnas rejected it, and Dayan Grunfeld here in his book, The Laws of Inheritance, references that it was not widely accepted, but to tell you how not widely accepted it was, Rav Zalman Nachemya Goldberg Zatzal in an article in Tchumen rejected it, Rav Feivel Cohen, Rav Shechter, Mor Rabbi Rav Shechter did not accept it. And several of the earlier commentaries also disagree with, of course, the lumdus of Rav Moshe, Chassam Sofer of Yaakov Edlinger, and the Rav Chaim Moshe, the Achiezer, and others. What was Dayan Grossness's major argument against it? His major argument against it was to disregard the argument of Rav Moshe was the following. There's Gemara in Temura. In his Leiv Aryeh and his Tshuva, he says the following. Where is it in Leiv Aryeh? Chelik Beis Simen Nun Zayin. Chelik Beis Simen Nun Zayin. It's not here in the source sheets, Dayan Grossness's Tshuva. But I'll tell you is one of his arguments. The Gemara says in Temura, Daf Chafei Amid Beis, the Gemara says that if there's a conflict between what an individual wants to have happen and what Hashem or what the halacha determines should happen, which do we think supersedes the other? What should the halacha be? What would you think? Obviously Hashem's directive. So what happens? A person has an animal and the animal gives birth to a firstborn. The firstborn is born. And now the person says, Hareini, I dedicate that animal as a korban ola. I am sanctifying that animal to be a special korban, a korban ola. Now, what is the real status of that firstborn animal? The real status of the firstborn animal is a bechor. A bechor has certain rules to it. And so, which is it? Is the animal determined to be a bechor, or is the animal determined to be an ola? The owner of the animal says, I want it to be a korban ola. But the Almighty has already determined that he wants the animal to be a bechor. So is the animal a bechor or a korban ola? That is very, very different dinim. So the Gemara there in Temura says that the halachic status of the animal is a bechor. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu determined what it should be, your declaration cannot overcome or supersede or trump the declaration of what Hashem wants. Says Dayan Grasnas Leiv Aryeh. So similarly over here, if one stipulates at death that they want the assets to go to someone that they determine in their secular civil law, but halacha, which is the mouthpiece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who comes along and says, I don't want it to go to that person. Halacha says it should go to someone else. Just like the Gemara in Temura says, what God wants comes before what we want. Similarly over here, what God wants will come before what the individual wants, and therefore halacha supersedes the secular civil will and not the secular civil will. It will not be binding. So this was a big chiddush of Rav Moshe. Really, it's only of Rav Moshe. Most others disagree. And they disagree with an enormous consequence. The consequence with which they're disagreeing about is, will it be gzela? Will it be gneva? According to Rav Moshe, if the beneficiary of the secular will keeps it and does not give it to whomever should have been the best beneficiary according to the halachic will, according to Rav Moshe, they're not a ganav. Whereas according to Dayan Grusnus and these other poskim that we mentioned, that individual would be a ganav because the halacha is what should and must supersede. Okay, so Rav Moshe really is a das yachid when it comes to this area. Okay, moving right along, we'll start the next topic. We still haven't gotten to, we're not going to get it today. Maybe we'll get to it next week. We have several more parts to this series about, so what's the halachic mechanism? What do you insert into the will in order to circumvent the halachic formula or hierarchy? If you have two children, a boy and a girl, and you want to give 50% of your assets to each, how do you do that? Because you're violating what the halacha would say. So relying or leaving it for a secular will is not enough. According to Rav Moshe, it will work, but according to everyone else, it will not be enough. So what do you do? What do you do? What about another factor? Maybe even without Rav Moshe, maybe even without Rav Moshe's enormous chiddush about the secular will, what about another halachic institution called Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMeis? We recently gave a chabura about Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMeis. We spoke about some aspects of it, but I want to talk about some other aspects of it in the context of our series here on Jewish considerations and wills and estates. So the Gemara in Baba Basra tells us the following. Source 32 on page 13. Amar B'Levi, Konan Kinyan Mishchid Meira Afilu B'Shabbos. You can perform an act of acquisition with a Shchiv Meira even on Shabbos. Normally we don't do transactions on Shabbos. Why? Mekach U'Memkar is Osir. Why? Because Shema Yichtov might come to write. People normally record their transactions. That's the responsible thing to do, is to record a transaction. So therefore a person might record their transaction and come to write. But an exception is a Shchiv Meira, somebody on their deathbed, somebody who is considered terminally ill. So a Shchiv Meira, you're allowed to konan kinyan, you can make a kinyan, you're not allowed to write on Shabbos, but you can do an act of acquisition. But it's not done out of concern of the opinion of Rabbi Lazar, that a Shchiv Meira, a sickbed gift, requires an act of acquisition. It is because the rabbis are concerned, the person's mental condition will deteriorate. So it's part of maintaining the person's well-being, which supersedes the laws of Shabbos. You're allowed to do that kinyan even on Shabbos. That is halacha of a Shchiv Meira. The Gemara, the Mishnah, also there in Baba Basra, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, B'Shabbos Dvarav Kayamim. If a Shchiv Meira gives his positions orally on Shabbos, his words are upheld. Shein Yachol Lichtov, because we forgive the fact that he never wrote it down because you're not allowed to write on Shabbos. So let's say a person has no will. They have no secular will, they have no halachic will. They've never recorded an indication of where they want to leave their estate. But now it's their deathbed. And on their deathbed they say, leave it to this one, leave it to that one, leave it to the other one. This is what I want to have happen with my things. So they have the status of a Shchiv Meira. And Divrei Shchiv Meira kiksuvim uchimesurin dami. The instructions of someone on their deathbed, we treat it as if it was actually a recorded halachic will. So when is that such? So Rabbi Eliezer says only on Shabbos. Shabbos you couldn't write it down. So if you recited it orally, if you articulated what you want, then we will consider it binding. Avalo b'chol. Rabbi Shua omer b'Shabbos amru kavachomer b'chol. Not only on Shabbos, but even more so during the week. Even more so. So the Gemara in Gittin, source 34, explains the following. Gemara in Gittin says the principle that you have to obey the commandments of the deceased. Holech manal ploni. If one hands his agent a money, he says, take this to so-and-so. V'halochu bikshu l'matzo. And he takes it and you can't find the person. Tani chada yachsu l'mshalech. V'tani idach l'yorshem mishtachu lo. So according to one, the money goes to the sender. But according to the Brisa, another Brisa, the money should be given to the heirs of the person to whom it was sent. In other words, you go try to give it to Avram, but you can't find Avraham. So do you bring it back to the one who sent you? Because the instructions was to give it to an Avram. Do you bring it back to Avram? Do you bring it back to the one who sent you? Or do you say, I couldn't find an Avram, but I found Yitzchak, his son. So since I was sent as an agent to deliver it to Avram, but I couldn't find Avram, the next best thing, the next closest thing is to give it to Yitzchak, his son. That the Gemara records as a machlokas. The Gemara continues, source 35. Rabbi Yudah Nasi Yom Mishum Rabbi Yaakov Mishum Rabbi Meir. Holech lav kizchi. Take is not the equivalent of acquire. So when you said take this to so-and-so, you didn't say acquire it on behalf of so-and-so. So as long as the sender is alive, you got to bring the money back to him. Because the instruction was holech, was bring it, go with it to him, but not acquire it on his behalf. If you had said acquired on his behalf, then his inheritor would have accepted if he's no longer alive. But you said, Holich, bring it. And when you got there, you found that he's not alive. So his son doesn't get it. You bring it back to the sender. Miu hecha demis. But in a case where the sender died while the recipient was still alive, amina mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis. You have to listen to the words of the deceased. The recipient acquired a claim to the money upon the sender's death. Even if he subsequently died, the money is given to the heirs. So here the Gemara in Gittin articulates this principle, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis. Again, we spoke about this. You could find it on YouTube, and please subscribe on YouTube. You can find it on YU Torah, rabbiefromgoberi.org. We spoke about mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis. Where do we learn it from, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis? We learn it from Yaakov making his son Yosef swear that he's not going to bury him in Mitzrayim, and that he's going to follow through on the instructions to him. This is a big machlokas we spoke about. If there's a mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, if there's an obligation to follow the instructions of someone on their deathbed, so then why did Yaakov have to make Yosef swear? You remember Yosef holds on to the only religious object at the time, and he makes an oath, he promises his father, I won't leave you here in Egypt. Moshe fulfills that promise we just read a couple weeks ago when he takes Yosef's bones. That was Yosef's promise, takes Yosef's bones. But Yosef had made a promise to his father Yaakov, he won't leave him in Mitzrayim, won't leave him in Mitzrayim either. Why did Yosef have to promise if mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis? So some wanted to prove from there, how far do we take this principle, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis? Does it only apply to monetary issues, or does it even apply to non-monetary issues? What if the instruction is not financially based? What if someone says, I don't want you sitting Shiva for me. I don't want you to suffer that whole year. You're not going to be able to go to simchas. I want you to be able to go. I want you to listen to music. I want you to be able to take haircuts. So mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis? Do you follow the will of the one who tells you? How far does mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis go? Do you have to listen to the will, the wishes, the words of the deceased? Only on financial matters or even on non-financial, super financial matters? So that is a machlokas and a debate centering around why Yaakov made Yosef take the promise. But there's another caveat. And Tosfos, we'll end with this and pick up from here next time. Tosfos in Gittin Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, source 36. Tosfos give a very, very important limitation to the rule of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis. Od mefarash rabbeinu tam d'lo amrinu mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis ela b'davar hashehushlosh mitchila l'kach b'yad shlish dumya dam hashlish mos l'bito. Tosfos rabbeinu tam hold that you only apply the obligation to listen to the words of the deceased when you only apply that in an area of when you have a third party holding the money. If the money was given to a third party, then mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis. Now it's very interesting. We'll pick up with this next time. Why would Rabbeinu Tam say that? And Rabbeinu Tam's view is considered the normative halacha. You only apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, which again, the whole reason we came out to this is someone who didn't have a halachic will, and they only had a secular or a civil will. So do you follow the secular or the civil will? That was how we came onto this. That was the question. According to Rav Moshe, even the secular or the civil will be binding. That was Rav Moshe. But leave out Rav Moshe. Even before you get to Rav Moshe, will you apply it? Do you say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis? So Rabbeinu Tam has a significant limitation that you only say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis if the money has been given to a third party to hold. Why that is, we'll pick up next time, and we'll see whether you say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis if somebody doesn't have a will, and then we'll get to, please God, soon, eventually, how to have a proper halachic will. But before we do, I implore you one more time, even at the point of annoying you, brsonline.org/global. There are so many of you who are not members of BRS, and yet BRS pays my salary, and Rabbi Shabtai's, arranges this amazing afternoon kollel, and all of our programs, classes, learnings. Take a moment. $18.36, I hope you'll give $180 or more, but help us continue to be able to provide you that content. All it takes is a moment. If you're watching on the portal, you could simply click donate, do it in honor and memory of someone. I want to thank the people who have given and ask and encourage and invite all who will give. The link is in the chat. Please click it, paste it. Please go brsonline.org/global. Have a wonderful day. We pick up now with Rabbi Shaket.